How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Not bad. This week on 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour, we're going to discuss Apple's 2020 year in review. Based on the notes that we have, turns out there were a lot of things announced back in March, which feels like 10 years ago. But it was a pretty busy year.
It's been a year for the world, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's also been a pretty packed year for Apple. Like, even through all of the pandemic disruption, you can't say that Apple hasn't executed, right? Like, they've done a lot.
Yeah. And but before you do that, I want to talk about a couple of things. One for me is 5G ultra wideband. I've got more experience with that, you know, the flagship feature of the iPhone 12 this year. And then you've got some stuff on shortcuts that we were going to share. But here's my update on 5G. So if we just back up a little bit, you know, iPhone 12 in October was announced, you know, first with 5G, not just the first 5G, but it's got like all the 5G compared to other phones. It's got all the bands. And, it was you know, half the event was Verizon talking about their ultra wideband network going live that day. That's ultra wideband being, you know, you've got LTE, which is all over the place. You've got 5G, which is in major markets, and you've got 5G ultra wideband, which is in select venues and select cities. And the idea there being, if you're in a major airport or a major, you know, event arena, concert venue, that kind of thing, you know, back when we could all do that thing and one day we'll be able to do that again. Then you'll all have really fast internet, and hopefully by having that many people on, it'll still work out well. That's nice. I've seen 5G ultra wideband in a few places, like passing a stadium on the interstate, or, you know, it pops up in the corner in your status bars, like you've got 5G UW, that Verizon presents it. But I've never been in a space where I'm going to be there, not just passing through with 5G UW. And this week I landed on it. I hit the jackpot for 5G UW. It is right across from my apartment. There's a park and they serve food and drinks and play music. And across from that is a very small shopping center with the restaurants and, you know, water fountain and things like that. And then places you can go and work from. And so I often will go out there and work, you know, no one's around. It's just me. And in both places, there is 5G UWB that you don't have to hunt for. It's just always there. And so I feel like, the year's coming to an end. I finally completed my 5G UWB scavenger hunt. And I can always go out there and get like 1500 down and, you know, 50 up, but so I was satisfied on like the tech demonstration side of things where I can always go and demonstrate that now that this phone's capable of doing this thing. You couldn't do it otherwise. Use case wise, I tried doing things like, at one point I was actually like kind of standing in a line and it was like, well, what can I do while I'm in line? So I went to download a playlist that had a lot of songs. And, I think it was like a rewind playlist. So I had like 100 songs on it. And so I timed how long it would take to download 100 songs. And it wasn't like crazy impressive. It was like, you know, 30 seconds, which maybe actually is impressive. And I remember, you know, if you go back far enough, that's highly impressive. Being able to download a song is highly impressive, but it wasn't like, crazy speeds. And so then I was going to download a movie from Apple TV Plus just to see what is that like, because that's something that Apple chose too. And I got over 60 seconds and counting, and I was like, this is no longer that impressive. I'm just going to give up. But I'm happy, though, that I can always do an impressive speed test at the very least. And it does feel very weird that, you know, I've got gigabit internet at home. And so on the wire, it's pretty good. But on, you know, on Wi-Fi, it's like 300 down. But it's also like 300 up. And so that's cool. Got good upload. And on the 5G UWB stuff, the download is crazy impressive even compared to my home internet, but the upload is mediocre. So it's early days still.
Yeah, like, it's good that you finally found a reliable spot for the Easter egg hunt. So whenever you need an ultra wideband screenshot, you can just go to that park and stand there and take the thing.
I switched carriers for this demonstration.
But it's still like, it still feels that the number one thing people do on fast 5G is they just take screenshots of the speed test app rather than actually doing anything of value.
Yeah, like, I did, you know, like I said, I go over there and work. And so I had my MacBook Air and I was on 5G UW and did hotspot. And in that situation, I guess I wasn't close enough to where the 1200 stuff down is. So I measured 400 down on the phone and like 300 down, or no, I think it was 600 down on the phone and 400 down on the Mac. So it, you know, if you hotspot it, you lose a little bit of stuff, of course. And we were talking before the show and you were saying over the wire, you're going to max out because of how US, because of how lightning speed is. It's not lightning fast. So, you know, that's that. And the other thing I wanted to mention is I saw this stuff in the news this past week where people are saying don't use Verizon's 5G, like not the UWB stuff, but just the 5G stuff.
Because the plain Jane stuff.
It can be slower than LTE would be. And so, you know, two things on that. One is just here in Orlando, I definitely saw way more AT&T 5G with good speeds than any Verizon 5G at all. It's more... You know, you don't have any of the UWB stuff with anybody but Verizon right now, but there was more of the AT&T 5G with faster speeds that I saw.
Yeah, they've definitely invested. Like Verizon's gone all in on the ultra wideband stuff up front to get the hero. You know, they can boast 1.5 gigabits, 2 gigabits.
Sure. Right?
Whereas AT&T's gone for, I guess, boasting network coverage of 5G because they can have the slower, you know, the twice as fast as 4G stuff, but in a lot more places.
And the LTE versus 5G, not ultra wideband stuff, it's like, it's the same, you know, it's like it's in the same ballpark, you know?
Yeah. It's immaterial, right?
Yeah. It's very immaterial.
Like even when you're on UWB, it's kind of immaterial for most tasks you're doing, right?
Yeah. Well, 5G ordinarily is not a cool demonstration unless you just show, hey, I got 5G, but 5G UW is a cool demonstration. It's like, look how fast this is. It's faster than my home Wi-Fi, but performance, but you know, what you're actually getting out of it is not so much from what I've seen so far. And even the demonstrations that, you know, Apple and Verizon talk about, we're able to enable this high data speed communication that you could only view this high resolution, you know, file of the human body and some important medical process because you've got this fast data connection and mobile and you can, like, a doctor can upload it. Well, the upload's mediocre. The upload's no different at all. Like on that ultra wideband stuff, it's 30 up is what I saw. Maybe that can change, but for now it's not equivalent. And
yeah, I'm sure that would change eventually, but
sure. Yeah.
Right now you just got to hope you can even get it before you even worry about anything more.
But this morning I was, had to go to the DMV and, I thought, oh yeah, let me test this 5G right here. Let me test, the 5G versus the LTE thing to see if those reports had anything to them, any merit. And naturally the LTE was faster than the 5G. Yeah. The upload was faster on 5G. In that case, it was like 30 versus 20, but it was, again, it's all immaterial.
Yeah. Like that stuff will get better. What basically you had normal 4G for a long time. And then in the last, like, you know, iPhone 6, iPhone 7, iPhone 8 generations, they started doing, quote, like MIMO, right? You've heard of the MIMO phrase, right?
And something in, something out.
Yeah, like multiple out, I think it is. Yeah. Basically, what that means is it's a whole load of jargon where the phone's using multiple bands at the same time. So it can connect to several different cell tower bands simultaneously, combine it together and get a faster speed. So you can be on the 4G... You know, I think in 3G land, they called it HSDPA plus because they do the same kind of trick on 3G as well.
Okay.
But obviously in the last 2 or 3 years, it's become very popular on 4G for that to happen just because, you know, cell towers distribute, they get the infrastructure. And so you get, you know, quote, combined 4G quite often.
I see. Okay. Okay.
But 5G is still relatively new.
Yeah.
And the multiple band stuff, is either non-existent or very scarce. And I don't think the FCC have even sold all of the spectrum yet that would make it work.
Okay.
So in time, you know, in probably over years, you're going to get to the point where I think they call it DSS, is going to be widely available on 5G as well. And so the places where right now it's like, why am I even on 5G? 4G is faster. Those will go away. But you know, it's not going to be tomorrow, right? It's going to be a while. And this is certainly something that Verizon doesn't like to pronounce to you when they say that 5G just got real, when in reality, that survey showed that 30% of the time staying on 4G versus normal 5G was significantly faster.
Just get more real later next time.
More real later. But yeah, that's not like a problem with 5G as it is. It's just a matter of distribution.
Yeah, right? which like, we saw with 3G and 4G.
Yeah, and if the phone status bar had like a different mode, for 4G when it's on DSS, like if you had a 4G D symbol in the corner, you'd see in those cases it's faster. If you just had the plain 4G logo, then it would be slow. Or OTE, you know what I mean.
Yeah. I looked up what DSS is, dynamic spectrum sharing. And
exactly. Yeah, so, hey. I like to pretend like I really know about this stuff. I really don't. But my high-level understanding is that on 4G, the phone is very rarely combining multiple spectrums together, multiple bands, to get a faster signal. On 5G, it can theoretically do that eventually, but that doesn't happen in practice.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm also trying to pour a Red Bull into a glass without sounding like it's not a liquid being poured into a glass, but that's what the mute switch is for, I guess. I'll find that in a minute. There's that.
In summary, would you say my initial expectations about 5G were about right?
I mean, I don't care about your expectations. All I care about is that I was on a hunt for 5G UWB and I found it, and I can always take anyone there to demonstrate it. Now, if you want to come have lunch with me, I can show you 5G UWB. Although you can't come because you're in tier four.
Tier four, baby.
Yeah, we're getting there. All right. Tell me about shortcuts and auto wallpaper stuff.
Yeah. So I've mentioned this a few times. When I was 14.3 was in beta, they brought back the set wallpaper action in the shortcuts app. And using iOS 14 automations, you can make it so that at a set time of day, you know, when something happens, you can trigger a shortcut. And so one thing I've wanted on my phone for a long time is like what you can have on the Mac, where you can have a changing wallpaper. So on the Mac, you go into like settings, or sorry, system preferences, display in general, and then you can say change wallpaper every 5 minutes or every half an hour or every day or something. And you can choose from your own photo library, or you can choose just from the stock ones that are built in. You can even choose from flat colors and just have a different one. Maybe every time you unlock the Mac, maybe just, you know, change on a daily basis. Nothing crazy, just a nice variation in photo, right? And I've wanted that on the phone for a long time. With the Apple Watch, you can basically make it happen by using like the photo face with an album, and then every time you raise your wrist, it chooses a different photo. Mm-hmm. But the iPhone's lock screen or the iPad's lock screen, it's a static image. Well, with this shortcut stuff, you can sort of make it work. And it does, and it's actually really nice. So I have on my iCloud photo library, I favorite about 1/10 of the collection of filters that I think are really nice. And the family does it as well, because their favorites go up on the Apple TV screensaver. Mm-hmm. So they have the photo screensaver, but rather than showing every photo that ever exists, and then you get like, you know, a million duplicates or rubbish you don't want, or, you know, screenshots and receipts, we just set it to the favorites library. So that's the one with the little stars on. And that works really well on the Apple TV. And on the phone, it works decently too. So what I done is I've made a shortcut, and I'm eventually going to do a post on this as I'm going around to it. Mm. So you create a shortcut, which basically just gets a random image from my photo library that is a favorite. It just selects one randomly, and then it applies that as the wallpaper. And then you have to set up an automation that runs that shortcut at a set interval. And then when that happens, you get a different picture every single time. You could just have it so you have to, you know, manually invoke the shortcut, and you could just look at the home screen and see it change. You could have like a home screen. You could put a widget, you know, one of the shortcuts widgets, which is just change wallpapers. You could just tap that if you wanted to. But I don't want the fuss of that. I want to do it automatically. Mm-hmm. So I have it set to fire on sunrise. So every day at sunrise, the photo changes. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. And my thought was, I basically want it to change once a day. And, you know, maybe I should set it for midnight or something, or maybe 3 a.m. in the morning when I'm asleep. But sunset seems fine. So off we go, set that from. And it's been, what, a month now with iOS 14.3? And it works surprisingly well. Like, if I didn't know that I'd done it manually by, you know, setting up, you know, the Robinson Crusoe of shortcuts to make it happen, it would almost feel like a built-in feature, right? You know, if I showed someone that, they would go, oh, that's nice. Where do I do it in settings? And it's like, no, you can't do it in settings. But it does actually work. There are a couple of, like,
You can share shortcuts easily, right?
You can share shortcuts, although I think the automation is probably more... I don't think you can share the automation part. You'd have to, like, tell someone else what to do.
Okay.
But you could share, like, the shortcut that you have to get the automation to run. But there are a couple of oddities about it, like... For one thing, only in iOS 14.4 have they added a setting for perspective zoom. So if you want perspective zoom, you know, that effect where you tilt your phone and the wallpaper shifts slightly, you can only do that through the set wallpaper action with 14.4. But I don't care about that, so it doesn't matter. There are occasions where, like, you want to be able to, like, manually crop the photo differently, which is what, if you were setting a randomly selected photo as your own wallpaper, you would resize it slightly and position it differently to fit in the portrait orientation of the phone.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work, as, you know, sometimes it's just cropping straight to the center. So sometimes you're not going
to get it. Like, you've got an album of pre-formatted pictures.
Yeah, like, if you wanted to... I've seen some people do this where they download a load of custom wallpapers from the web and just make an album of wallpapers so they know it fits exactly. You could just exactly do that. But I like seeing, you know, my family and stuff.
Yeah.
So that is slightly awkward. And on the Mac, it's not as much of a problem because, like, landscape photos are just... You know, they just fit in more space. The iPhone's weird aspect ratio. You don't have photos in that aspect ratio, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's understandable. The main thing that annoys me is that every sunrise, it sets the wallpaper, but it also has to tell you that it's doing it because Apple seems to be scared that someone's going to accidentally set an automation up and then forget they've done it. So every sunrise, I get a notification on the lock screen. Running your shortcut. Great.
Yeah.
Next to day later, running your shortcut. And you can't turn it off. There's no way to turn it. There's no way to disable it or anything. So every day, I just get this stupid shortcut.
You can't go to like settings notifications and turn off
the shortcuts app doesn't exist in the list in the notification settings. So it's just not there. They force you to see this notification.
Hmm.
I mean, I kind of get it. Like, say if I pranked you and like set something up to run every day, and you weren't aware of it, then like. You'd be like so confused when every day something.
If only there was a system way to like, you know, press and hold an alert to disable that kind of alert, you know, or even like a UI that asks you automatically, do you want to keep getting these kind of alerts? That's all there. They could put that there.
I could see a middle ground where it like shows it three times. And then on the fourth try, you can say, please don't tell me about this anymore. Unless the shortcut changes.
I still want to get do not disturb to stop being an alert because it's so against the nature of do not disturb.
Yeah, that's annoying. So that is frustrating. And so hopefully one day there'll be like a super pro mode of shortcuts where you can not let it tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that is slightly awkward, which wouldn't be the case if it was like a built-in feature of the wallpaper settings versus this weird shortcut, is that if your phone runs out of battery and you miss the sunrise, the shortcut doesn't run when the phone turns back on because it's not at that time. Like the phone has to have battery when that time is. Now,
how dark mode can... can pick up on even if that's your trigger is sunset.
Right. Surprise. Yeah. Yeah. So I forgot to charge my phone last night and then I woke up this morning and the wallpaper hadn't changed and I noticed I hadn't got a notification. I was like, oh, it's missed the sunrise time. So it just doesn't do it.
Yeah. Well, charge your phone.
I mean, most of the time I charge it overnight anyway, so it's not a problem. I just forgot once or twice. But if it was built in, that wouldn't happen. But in general, if you want an automatically changing photo wallpaper for your iPhone, it's a pretty good solution.
I think it's cool on the phone. It might be cool on the iPad because I tend to not worry about alerts on there as much. And so either there's a bunch of alerts, or I've got everything off, or it's just in do not disturb mode anyway. And I don't pay attention to alerts. I haven't tried it yet, but I might try it there because the iPad's, you know,
a subset album of, you know, 10 wallpapers that you really, really like and they're already cropped to size. Then it just, you know, changes to that once a day or something.
Yeah. So the state of wallpapers, aside from that, is you've got dynamic wallpapers that are just the blob since iOS 7.
The little
7.
Polka dot things. Yeah.
And then you've got the ones that do react to time and dark and light mode. You know, earlier this year we had all the information about like how they're going to let you do more wallpapers, blurring and, you know, custom CarPlay wallpapers, et cetera. I wonder if that stuff gets rolled over into next year, next release.
Yeah, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, because if you remember, we had reporting where they were like working on like extensions so you could see a third-party wallpaper.
Yeah.
You could see like third-party wallpaper packs in settings.
Yeah.
They're probably still working on that and it will come back at some point.
Yeah. Cool.
But if they could add in, you know, automatically changing wallpapers at the same time, I'd be happy with it because I prefer to use the system built-in one compared to like, you know, the do it, roll your own shortcut thing. But it does work surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, let's take our first break for this episode and tell you about Helix Sleep. Are you sleeping on a sagging old mattress? You just deserve better than that. And that's where Helix comes in. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz in 2 minutes and get instantly matched with a mattress that is perfect for you. Tune to your sleep preferences and body type. Helix knows that not everyone is the same. They have several different models like super soft, medium, and firm mattresses and other things like that. There's even a version that is designed to cool you down if you sleep hot. Now, I'm pretty jealous because I know, Zach, that you did the quiz and you actually got sent a Helix mattress to try. So how'd you like it?
That's true. So I took the Helix quiz and I matched with the Midnight mattress. and you know, cool name, got a queen size mattress, very nice. What the quiz was like was it asked you, you know, how do you want this thing to feel, soft, medium, firm? And it's probably a popular answer, but I said medium because it's like soft, firm, I don't know, maybe in the middle, you know, some medium. And then they ask you, how do you sleep, on your side, on your back, on your stomach, or do you move around all night? And I'm certain that I move around all night, and it's not just one or the other, because that much I do before I fall asleep. And so that combination of answers paired me with the Midnight mattress, which, you know, I'm of the age where I've only ever bought mattresses online in a box where they come to you and expand. And I bought a previous one years ago, and there was only one model. And honestly, like for the first couple of weeks, my back had to adjust. And I think that if your back has to adjust your mattress, it's probably not a good fit for you. With this Helix one, I like the idea that there's not just one model for everybody, but a bunch of different models based on what you're doing, your preferences. And so it's really good. Like, so the way I kind of describe it is that I've got nice pillows and everything, and the whole mattress feels like as good as the pillow feels. It doesn't feel like a big pillow, but it feels as good as the pillows do. And, you know, I did some traveling over Thanksgiving and Christmas and some work travel as well. And, I have to say, like, coming back to the Helix mattress, like, I haven't found anything better than that on the road or even at family's, you know, so, highly recommend it.
Nice, nice. So if you're looking for a mattress, just take the Helix quiz, order the mattress that you'll match with, and it comes shipped to your door for free. You don't need to visit a physical store. And don't just trust us, Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine. So just go to helixsleep.com/95Mac, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a custom mattress to give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you can try it out for 100 nights for free. If you don't love it, they'll come back and pick it up for you too. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for happy hour listeners. So go to helixsleep.com/95Mac now. That's helixsleep.com/95Mac.
I didn't get the pillows. I kind of want the pillows now. Come on. Come on, Helix. So let's talk about Apple's state of hardware throughout 2020. So the year, you know, the calendar year, you know, January, February, we're in normal times. There's normal times, in America and in England, at least. In March, we come to, you know, the way that the year went. But that's also whenever Apple started kicking into motion with hardware releases. So what was first?
Yeah, because like January, February, they only really shipped hardware-wise the rack-mounted version of the Mac Pro.
Yeah, I was catching up on 2019, like the end of the year stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And so then we come to March and we get the first big like product release, and it was a MacBook Air. I actually kind of forgot this happened because, you know, we've been so overwhelmed by the M1 stuff. But in March, Apple did a MacBook Air update for the with CPU bump and the removal of the butterfly keyboard for the Magic Keyboard, because in March, that was still the predominant concern in people's mind because they only just changed away from butterfly keys on the 16-inch MacBook Pro, which was in that, you know, the end of 2019.
It was like October, November of the year before. Yeah.
But we were still all waiting for them to actually roll it out across the line. And they finally did it in March for the MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. It's kind of mental, right? Like, that whole saga feels so long ago, right? Like, it just feels... That wasn't like a 2019 thing, I know. That happened this year, yeah. Right?
The 2020 is when they finished the transition from butterfly keyboard, which only began a few months prior.
And we spent, what, 4 years moaning about it?
Yeah.
Like...
More than that, kind of, if you think about, yeah.
It's crazy to think about how, like, perspectives change, because mm-hmm. whenever you're talking about laptops from, let's say, 2017 through 2019, the first thing and, like, the predominant thing on people's heads was, what is the saturation of the keyboard? And Apple went through 4 generations of butterfly keyboard
the
designs.
The MacBook Air got its current design without the functional keyboard.
Yeah, the 2018 Retina MacBook Air had the butterfly keyboard. And that was like the top thing that was in all the reviews. It was like, we love the MacBook Air. Yeah. We love that it's Retina, but we don't love the keyboard.
Yeah. Keyboard has a replacement program from day one, basically.
And Apple had so many tries at like fixing the butterfly keyboard. It just became like a laughing stock, right? Like, I'm still suffering with the butterfly keyboard to this day, but I think it's just original, funny to have that perspective of like, that's all we talked about when it came to Macs for so many years.
And the sad thing is that because of, you know, Apple, the way that they sold those for years before they made the change to an equally comfortable keyboard with like low profile, that's so far reliable. You know, with a different mechanism, you know, switch mechanism, because they sold those for 4 years, there's going to be many, many, many of those in the wild for a long, long time. You know, I have plenty of friends, professionally and otherwise, who have, glowing Apple logo laptops, which are the good little keyboards. But just to say, that's
it just shows the longevity of the machine.
Yeah.
And those people, most of them don't even know that they changed the keyboard since. So they just feel like Mac keyboards are really bad, right? Like our technical sphere or technology sphere, it becomes the focus for those 4 years. But as soon as March rolls around, we all forget about
it. We're done.
But there are lasting effects for, you know, real customers. That it's kind of, you have to remember that. Like, and I'm one of those people. I'm still rocking the 2016 MacBook Pro, and I can firmly tell you that my butterfly keyboards are terrible shape. My problems go beyond the reported stuck keys, double key presses. Half of my keys just come out of their sockets. Like, if you tap too hard, they just come out. Before the 2016, I had a 2012 MacBook Pro. The difference in keyboard quality between that one and this one, night and day. I actually liked how the butterfly keyboard felt. I love the rigidity. I love the, you know, the stable key presses, but just the reliability, the durability is just not there in any way. And I'm so glad that that's now what feels to us like a thing of the past.
Yeah. What replaced it is very good and is based on that, but it's very good. Also in March, it's so hard to believe if I'm trusting your notes, I don't know if I trust them or not, but, an iPad Pro with an A12Z and the Magic Keyboard, which was the trackpad, more than just the keyboard folio where it's like fabric cover, but it's actually Magic Keyboard. It's the plastic keys with the scissor switch mechanism, not the butterfly mechanism. That was all, you know, in the whole hinge and this USB-C charging and pass through and all that.
The floating.
Yeah. The iPad is highly forgettable. The Magic Keyboard is not. It's a very, that thing will stick with us and last for a long, long time because it's a very, very good product.
Yeah, the A12Z iPad Pro, they might as well not have released it.
It was the first Apple product with LiDAR.
Correct.
It was the first iPad with a second camera, not telephoto, but like the iPhone 11s and 12s. It has, you know, normal and then wide, or wide and ultra wide. And then, you know, otherwise,
because when that press release came out in March, they had four apps they were showing that this is going to support the LiDAR camera late this year. I'm pretty sure none of those apps ever update to support the LiDAR camera. LiDAR has just not been a thing. And maybe it will be one day, but the A12Z iPad Pro was released in March. It had one extra GPU core, which makes no difference at all. And it had a LiDAR scanner.
At least the iPhone uses LiDAR in photography.
Yeah, in some specific areas.
You can do, me and my Space Explored colleague, Seth Krakowski, we were at the museum recently, and they had one of those, I guess it was an infrared camera or something, where you can see where Face ID sprays on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were playing, I think we were comparing what is the Face ID look like compared to the back stuff. And we could, I think it was all visible, but it just looked different on that camera. You know, so it's there. It's working.
Yeah, you can see it. It just doesn't really have a use case. It almost feels like developer hardware. We need you to make AR stuff. So here's an
iPad
Pro.
We can't wait to see what you do with it. Please do.
Yeah, we really can't wait to see what you do with it down the road. I don't know. It just, the thing is, though, the 2018 iPad Pro was so good that it doesn't even feel that bad.
It's passable that the new version, it's just it actually was nice that they gave it something. Because it certainly stopped us from saying, why haven't they updated the iPad Pro since 2018? Because if they didn't do that March update, as small as it was, as negligible as it was, we didn't ask, where's the new one?
Yeah, and I think the Magic Keyboard has been well received, right? Mm-hmm. But they could have easily just release the Magic Keyboard accessory and that'd be it, and people would have, nobody would be bothered and nobody would care. We wouldn't be sitting here today saying that, oh, they should have updated the iPad Pro, it was desperately in need of an update. If you tell me what update they had ready for March, I'd be like, you don't need to worry about that. Like, because we keep hearing these rumors of them doing like a 5G one and a, you know, A14 processor one, and maybe it's going to have a upgraded screen technology and stuff. And if that had come out again this year, then this March one would be even more forgettable. But it's just a weird outlier, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's kind of... sits around.
It was nice that the keyboard also worked with the 2018 models, and then later on with the iPad Air. April iPhone SE, not the iPhone 5S size model, but the iPhone 6 size model.
Yeah, this is basically the iPhone 8, but priced at $399.
Yeah, and there's no like iPhone 8 Plus version of SE Plus could come
so far.
So far, Quo believes it'll be a larger sized SE in the future, but also. Maybe that's got like Touch ID on it. It's more like an iPad Air as we know it now with Touch ID on the side.
Yeah. Like, Quo keeps talking about this like SE Plus, SE 2 type situation. But that one sounds like it won't just look like an old design.
Yeah. At that point, SE is more like what we, well, I mean, with the Apple Watch, the current
kind
design.
Of, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like the Apple Watch is the modern design, but it doesn't have like ECG and stuff, right? Yeah. Like the iPhone 8, the iPhone SE is almost identical to an iPhone 8. Like, you could barely tell the tell it apart. Like, it's so similar. You get the A13 chip, obviously, which is nice. But in terms of like external look, it'd be really.
I didn't spend a whole lot of time this year thinking about the iPhone SE, the new one.
Yeah, it's nice they have it, and it's good as an entry level phone. But if they do like an SE Plus or something next year that is materially different looking, that'll be more of an impact, right? Because the rumor keeps being they're going to bring the Touch ID sensor they put on the iPad Air, and that'll be on the phone. So you'll get all screen, you get, you know, thinner bezel, LCD, cheaper iPhone.
Yeah.
But when a Face ID, it'll just use Touch ID on the side instead.
The first iPhone SE that was like the iPhone 6S and an iPhone 5S casing, that was probably the best model, especially when it was brand new, because it was a very good value. And you got, you know, I think Apple called it Phil Schiller called it a beloved, you know, form factor. It was. But you got things like Apple Pay and Live Photos that you didn't have otherwise in the 5S case, basically. With this SE, the new phones, iPhone 10 and later, are so wildly beyond, you know, just design wise that this SE just, it has a market, and it's not, you know, doesn't, I don't think about it a whole lot.
Yeah, because when the old SE was like current, the new design was still really expensive, right? Like, it was at the $999 level. It was only last year with the iPhone XR or whatever they started to bring it down to like $750. So nowadays the older design sticks out more, I think, because there's less of a jump. Like, you can get an iPhone XR today for $599. It's a lot closer to the iPhone SE price point, in terms of, and then you actually look at what you get, and it feels kind of like a no-brainer. I mean, it's good they came out with it, and it turned out to be appropriate timing, as we kind of had like the economic slumps, and people didn't want to spend as much money, and everyone's concerned about, you know, whether they're going to be able to have their job still. So it kind of worked out for them. But yeah, it's kind of like,
I mean, and in this time of the year, it was kind of awkward for Apple to release anything, and in the case of the SE, that was, you know, good price story, and the same with the, you know,
and to be honest, all of those fears turned out not to matter, because Apple's had like the best financial quarters ever. So that all of the stuff about like economic concerns just fell away completely in hindsight
for Apple,
least, yeah. Obviously, the world's in
very very different.
Very bad.
Come May, we have the actual like goodbye.
Come what May?
Goodbye of the butterfly keyboard. Come on, man. With the 13-inch MacBook Pro. So we had 16-inch MacBook Pro, good keyboard. 13-inch MacBook Air, good keyboard. And then the 13-inch MacBook Pro was the last to get the magic keyboard, which is scissor switches again, but with the flip profile.
Yeah. And it was basically a non-update, because they only really changed like the keyboard about it. And that was about it.
That's all they had to do. Good.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, we didn't know what was to come, right?
Like, sure, May. June's next month. We're in May at this point.
Yeah, like, as of May, it felt, well, okay, well, are we just going to have... Because I think, obviously, the ARM transition was expected at some point, but it wasn't until very close to WWDC that we even thought it was, like, on the cards for this year, per se. And even...
Because it's been around the corner for years.
Yeah, right. And even at... even in June, before the event, we weren't 100% confident that, like, Apple would ship an ARM Silicon Mac this year, right? Like, it might have been a, we announced WWDC, the first one comes early 2021 kind of time frame. So yeah. I think everyone in their head had just kind of adjusted to, okay, Apple's just doing like, you know, we've got one more year of Intel stuff, sure. So we'll just get butterfly keyboards and everything. We'll get butterfly keyboards off of everything, and we'll just kind of coast. And everyone's like, okay, you did a MacBook Air, okay, you did the MacBook Pro, you got the 16-inch, fine. We'll just, you know, we'll look at, see what's coming. Maybe they're going to do an ARM MacBook Air, you know, late in the holidays, and then they'll slowly degrade everything else. But obviously, they went way further than that, as mm-hmm. we found out. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, like, if you cut off the year in June, the sentiment about the Mac, the only positive sentiments would be they got rid of the bad thing, right? Do you see what I mean? Like, yeah. Yeah, they didn't do anything in the first half of the year that was actually, like, looking forward.
Yeah.
But they made up for it, of course.
Yep. Let's think of sponsor.
All right. Yeah. Second sponsor of the episode. Do you want to skip the grocery store? With a lot of us out avoiding outdoor trips at the moment, Sunbasket is a great way to eat delicious, healthy food without having to leave the house. Get Sunbasket oven-ready meals delivered to you each week. Sunbasket meals are made with organic fresh produce, sustainable seafood, and using meat that is free of antibiotics, hormones, and steroids. Their chefs have won Michelin stars and a James Beard Award. So why not take the night off and let them cook for you? Try delicious meals such as pappardelle pasta with wilted spinach, sweet peas and fresh ricotta, or maybe southwestern turkey and sweet potato skillet. Or perhaps cauliflower macaroni and cheese. And of course, there's much more to choose from. Meals come freshly prepared. There's no recipe to follow or prep required. Put them straight in the oven and they heat up in as little as 6 minutes. All you have to do is heat and eat. It means no mess in your kitchen and far less cleanup than a traditional prepared meal. Sunbasket also has paleo, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and gluten-free options to check out as well. So right now, Sunbasket is offering you $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour, all one word, at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $35 off your order. sunbasket.com/happyhour, promo code happyhour.
Yep, and I just want to say thanks to Sunbasket as well. I've received Sunbasket meals before, and you know, these days you can get anything delivered to you, including your groceries. But what Sunbasket does for me is that it solves the problem of what do I even put together and pick out? Because if I'm going to, I can make spaghetti, I can make eggs, that's about it. With Sunbasket, I can make a whole lot of other things that are pretty impressive. So thanks, Sunbasket.
All right. Yep. So June,
WWDC. And it's at the end of June, not the beginning because of, you know, pandemic and you know,
it had to be done remotely.
It's all virtual. Yeah. It was really impressive though, what they pulled off.
Yeah. Actually, that we should mention that. Like, yeah. It's the end of the year now, but I think Apple has clearly shown that they've led the way on virtual presentations, yeah. Right? Like, Apple's production values on the June keynote, on the, you know, the iPhone stuff in the later on, it was just so well done. You could almost imagine that they had chosen to do it that way rather than having to like adjust to the situation. Mm-hmm. I still think when we're allowed to, you know, all meet and mingle and traveling's back on track and stuff again, Apple's going to want to do in-person events because they just love that like atmosphere. But they certainly rose to the occasion with incredibly well-produced video content and pre-recorded presentations. And we've seen the likes of like Samsung and stuff try as well. And they do all right, but you know, Apple really put themselves as the crowning achievement on that one.
I, you know, for the a developer conference in person makes a lot of sense. For the product keynotes, those are so much smaller. I mean, that's why they're at Steve Jobs Theater, because it's for press to get hands-on, you know, and see something in person. But if there's not a hands-on opportunity, you know, one of the Apple events I went to, you know, I think the one that was in WWDC was the Apple services event, and there was nothing hands-on in that. That yeah. would have been a good one to do virtually, you know, for everybody involved, because there was nothing to see there.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, maybe they do some virtually, some in person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if they do,
but the remote experience got so much better for every event this year. I think it's way more rewatchable as long as the content, you know, is good. What they're showing off, you know.
Yeah, it's a balance, right? Like, yeah. and one of the stories that we haven't covered because it just like crossed over the holiday period is that Bloomberg quoted Tim Cook in a internal meeting, basically saying to employees that. He was saying, we're not going to probably have employees back fully in the office until June of next year. That's 2021. But when we are back in place, we have seen how well employees have been able to carry on doing their work at the same level of collaboration and quality as they had before. And we're definitely going to take those learnings into account in the future. So he was kind of hinting at like more opportunities for like remote work employees going forward. And also, I think that's going to inform what they do for product events and stuff. Like,
do you ever say learnings in a sentence on your own?
No,
I don't like it. I think
that's such a like a CEO word.
I think
sure.
It's a fake word. Yeah,
yeah. It's like we don't actually want to say what we're going to do, so we'll just say we've got the learnings. To back it up.
Not real.
But yeah, I'd be absolutely when the world's back on track, whether that's you know end of 2021 or 2022, hopefully, the iPhone keynote is going to be in person. They're gonna that's what I'm saying. That's my guess. They're not going to want to go back to like the pre-recorded video stuff. I don't know, maybe they have like a video section, but they still invite press to come and do hands-on and stuff. Like, there has to be some... They don't want to give up on all that, because there is a lot of value in having like real press in the audience doing tweeting and blogging, and then straight after you have the event, you can go and, you know, prime them in the hands-on room and stuff. Like, yeah, for services, maybe they don't need to do it so much, but...
We'll probably never have another services-only event.
Because
they haven't done, like, well, I mean, it's a weird year, but they haven't done just a TV-only event of, like, here's all the TV stuff coming.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to... I know people think they were going to do that, whatever, but I'm... If... At the very beginning, in January last year, they invited, like, Hollywood press to the TCAs, which is, like, the full...
They used another event to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they basically had another event, which is a common place for all the big studios networks to announce like upcoming shows for the season. Mm-hmm. Apple had like a day there of their own and they announced, you know, six shows or whatever. So I think they're probably just going to do that unless they have something that's like really fundamental. They'll like give you a slot. It is part of another event. Like we saw them do the Foundation trailer in WWDC, right?
Sure. But
I'd be kind of surprised if they do like a hover... Like every year they have like a March event, which is like, here's just what we got new in TV land. Because A, the March 2019 event kind of went down badly. Like people didn't like it.
It was also packed with a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. And
Arcade's
secondly,
coming, News Plus was there, Apple Card.
Yeah, it was out
was
and stuff
there.
Like, yeah. So as well as, you know, it generally not working too well and people didn't like it. There was no trailers, blah, blah, blah. Also, there are just better venues in like the Hollywood scene that accommodate that kind of stuff rather than Apple doing its own. So sure. I don't think they're probably going to do like service exclusive stuff going forward. But if there is like a service announcement or, you know, they have trailers and stuff, they can squeeze them in around other like hardware event kind of situations.
Yep. And again, June was all about Apple Silicon's coming and you got your, well, some people got their GTKs, their developer transition kit. Those are still hanging around. Don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, like in June, it was. I think my biggest takeaway from like what I can remember from June, people expected these things to be good, right? But they didn't meet. They beat them. Do you know what I mean? Like what people had in their heads of what Apple was going to deliver by the end of the year, and on the Apple Silicon front, no one expected it to be like three Macs and then for them to be as good as they ended up being. Like. Yeah. They really floored us.
I mean, we thought there'd be really good battery life, and there was, but that's also impressive because battery life promises are never what they in performance, you know, it's never what you get. And battery life on these things is so good. I love it. It's so good. And performance is really good too.
We'll talk about the M1 stuff when we get to know, like November.
Yeah, but that's the June announcement plus all the June, you know, all the software previews and betas and everything.
July, nothing happened. Obviously, that's just like iOS 14 beta.
In July, I really got the gears running with spaceexplorer.com, and I went to the Mars rover launch. That's my July report for you. It was my first time on NASA property as press. That's what I'm saying. That's why Apple slowed down a little bit for me.
August. Again, I'd forgotten this until I did the notes for today's episode.
Uh-huh.
The iMac update, because who would remember the iMac update? Because it doesn't look any different.
The best iMac ever made.
They gave it 10th generation Intel CPUs. This was post Apple Silicon announcement. Because remember, mm-hmm. Cook's wording, we still have great Intel Macs in the product, in the pipeline. So this is clearly what those were, because I don't think we're going to see a different Intel Mac at all with that time frame is long gone. They were very forgettable because they look the same. They still had the same date design that goes back to 2012. And if you want to look face on, it goes back to 2010. Everyone wants them to do a big revamp of the iMac. And that's probably one of the top things I'd have on like my wish list for 2021 is please do a modern iMac that, you know, is powered by Apple Silicon, so it can be really fast, but also, you know, update the external design so it looks modern. But the one thing that was quite nice about this is they brought nanotexture, the matte screen technology or the matte screen cover finish that was previously only available on the Pro Display XDR as a $1,000 add-on purchase. That was available on the iMac for a much more, well, quote, much more reasonable $300 add-on.
It's way more reasonable, and it's the only reason I even remember this iMac at all. I think I added that part to the note because this is what stood out to me.
Yeah.
Our colleague Chance Miller bought one of these iMacs after the ARM Macs were announced, I think, or maybe just before they were announced because he wanted a desktop. And I asked him, did you get nanotexture? Because if you did, then maybe I'll buy that after you know, you're done with it. He didn't because he didn't think anyone would appreciate it. But to me, that I was tempted to get it for that reason, because I think nanotexture, I've seen it in person, and it's, you know, it's either for you or not, and it's really for me. I really like it. And now my situation is that I've got a big window behind me and there's sunlight, and, you know, I tilt my monitor to the side to get that off of there, but I would love nanotexture. So, you know,
what do you think about, would you go to a new iMac possibly when they do revamp it?
I would go to a new iMac, not because my MacBook Air isn't doing something that I wanted to do, but because I want a nanotexture display. Mm-hmm. And right now my display, before I was using two LG 4K ultrafine displays side by side. And, the M1 MacBook can only do one display externally. So I only use one now. I have both, but I only have one on my desks right now. I would totally do the iMac because what would I get out of it? I'd get a larger screen with more real estate, you know, more screen real estate, and I'd get nanotexture for the first time. Hopefully a new design, you know, which I think it will look better than the, I think case wise and like design wise, it'll look better than the Pro Display XDR because that's not design first, it's like function first, and so it's thick. And
so much of the Pro Display XDR's like chassis design is purely because they have to run the screen at like 1600 nits, so it gets so hot.
Yeah, it's not for style; it's for performance. And I think that that whatever Apple does on the new iMac will look way better than that does. You know, though maybe we're not going to see 34 inches and or whatever the size it is, an 8K or whatever resolution it is, 6K. I don't know. But
Pro Display is 6K.
Yeah, if it's just 27 inches and it's 5K still and just has, you know, a better casing around it, and
thinner bezels, thinner like overall body,
and you can get maybe
rounded corners on the screen, that'd be nice.
Yeah, and you can get nanotexture, and the stand comes with the iMac. Like, you know, that's for me. And so it'll be primarily to have a bigger display with a with a coating that I really want to have on a display. And then I can run the two 4K monitors on either side of it. And I've got a VESA mount. And so it could literally, like, they're hovering. They could go on either side of the iMac. And that'd be a pretty cool, you know, pretty. I like more real estate. And so I will buy it, not because of desktop performance, desktop always on, that kind of thing, but just to have a display that I like that comes with the computer.
Okay, September, normally iPhone season, but...
But back in August, Luca Maestri, CFO of Apple, said, we're not going to have iPhones next month. It's going to be later this year.
Yeah, they very rarely pre-announced that the iPhone was not coming.
Yeah.
That really shows you how different this year was, because Apple very rarely addresses that an iPhone's coming at all. Like, they don't even want to tell you that they're making another iPhone until it's ready, but they had to take a special call out to say
everything you need to know about Apple's on apple.com. If it's on apple.com, it's not real. That's the line.
So what did we get in September? We got
Apple Watch Series 6, which is, you know, we learned, and like pre-pandemic, we learned a lot about the software features of what's coming in the fall, including that there would be this ECG app. Not ECG, that's prior. We learned that there would be improvements to ECG, but then also blood oxygen sensing. Mm-hmm. So you could get your blood ox level. And that materialized in this Apple Watch. It has the right hardware for that. This whole other color of light sensor. That's the main thing. But also, in the addition class, you got rid of ceramic. Okay. You still have titanium and two shades. In the stainless steel class, space gray becomes graphite. Gold, I think, is a new tone of gold.
Yep.
Otherwise, same there. And then in the aluminum side, so the most affordable Apple Watch, you got this navy blue color, and you got red, product red. And that the colors is what the biggest thing to me. That's what I'll remember of these years, I think, is, well, at least for in short term, is that you got new colors this year. The blood oxygen stuff, you know, it's cool. And then we also saw, you know, even just recently.
It's cool, but you do it once or twice, then you forget about it.
Yeah, or it tells you when you need to know. It's an easy, you know, it's one of those.
It's passive, yeah.
It's Health Guardian, where, you know, you love it when it kicks in and you need it. But otherwise, it's like insurance. But the colors, those are cool. And then also new bands. So we had the Solo Loop, which is like the sport band, but there's no pen or no holes. It comes in like 12 different sizes. And, so you measure out your wrist, or you don't really go into a store and try it on. So you kind of measure out your wrist, or Apple PR guesses what size your wrist is, and they do it correctly. Amazing. But there's the similar material, but like feels way different than the sport band Solo Loop. And then there's the braided loop, I think is what it's called. And I've you know, it's been a few months since those things came out, and I've been using them. The Solo Loop, I endorse that. I think it's nice if you get your sizing right. The braided loop, or whatever it's called, I don't even know if that's what it's called. But that one, I don't recommend it. You know, with the time it launched, it's $100. So it costs twice as much as, you know, the base model band. Same as a nice leather band. It's, you know, you can get it wet and it dries off easily. That's fine. But, it never felt like a $100 band. I liked the way it looked and felt at first, but it didn't age well because I've only had it for a few months and I was wearing it every single day. And, I think it's the sizing thing. I think that size 8 for me was perfect. And at some point, it just was stretched too much and it feels loose sometimes. The, when you put it in the watch, I know that there were some reports about this, but it's thinner than the edge of the watch casing, which feels, it's almost like it's made for a smaller watch than it is. And then you can see the silver metal on the connectors that go into the watch at a glance.
Yeah, that's not very nice.
It's the first version of this, and maybe they've improved these over. Yeah, I don't know that they have though, but you know, on a red watch, that silver metal part of the band that shouldn't be seen visible stands out. And so does the edges that aren't, you know, edge to edge inside. So, for that one, for the braided one, you know,
you have the other Solo Loop though, right?
Yeah, I've got this. I've got the Solo Loop, and the braided Solo Loop is the one that.
Is that what you wear the most?
No, I sport band.
You're back to sport band,
and the reason is the ability to change sizes is actually really good. Like if I'm going for a run, which I've been doing again lately, I want it to be tighter on my wrist.
Yeah,
and also just like throughout the day, I don't know, you know, probably water weight, but my. The preciseness of like a one size fits all band is not great, even when you size it out. And so sometimes I go from one pen to the next pen, you know.
Oh, I can relate to that. Like I don't have the Solo Loop, but on the sport band, I couldn't tell you why, but some days I wake up and the pin I normally of them feels slightly too tight. So I have to do the one either side of it. Like for your physiology just changes, I guess, depending on various factors, depending on the weather, depending on whatever else. If it's really sweaty, you don't want it so tight. Like, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. I really wanted the braided one in red because, you know, that came out later than the other ones did. And I was sent the black version to review, which is probably what I would have bought at launch. And I loved it initially. It's just that it didn't age well. And for twice as much as the other bands said, you know, not great. So I ended up not buying the red one because I don't want to gamble and this thing could be just like the other one. So.
All right. Let's take our final break and then we'll talk about the iPad Air.
All right.
CleanMyMac X is an all-in-one cleaning and optimizing software solution for your Mac. A single package that combines the most useful features for spring cleaning your computer. You can scan for outdated junk files, easy work out what is using up all your hard drive space using Space Lens. It makes a visual virtual map of how your storage is distributed across all of your files and folders. Easily declutter old cache files, logs, mail attachments that you no longer need, and so much more. CleanMyMac X detects it all, and you could potentially save gigabytes of space with a single click. Because unfortunately, when you remove a map program, often it just leaves around little like preference files and caches that a computer no longer uses or needs. And there isn't really a good way to clean that stuff out using built-in macOS features. But CleanMyMac X is here to the rescue. Use SmartScan to delete it all in just a couple of clicks. And CleanMyMac X is designed to be super easy to use. The app will show you step-by-step explanations for every component, so you can be fully confident in the tweaks that it's making. CleanMyMac also features a system report menu, a dashboard of stats like free space, CPU load, used RAM, and other essentials. It's a beautifully designed menu, and it offers a sneak peek at the state of your entire system. Learn more about CleanMyMac X and download it for free at macpaw.app/happyhour. That's macpaw.app/happyhour. Thanks to MacPaw for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, here's my MacPaw CleanMyMac endorsement. I went to buy it recently to do a proper uninstallation and manage storage. And I couldn't, I had a license already. So yeah, that was nice. That's cool. So I'm actually a customer.
iPad Air, I think you can argue is the best non-Mac thing that Apple released this year. Oh, are you going to disagree with me?
Yeah, you could argue that. It's a very good iPad. You know, it cost more than I wanted it to at launch, and I just can't forget that because I was hoping they'd stick to that price they had before.
Yeah, $499, but it's $599.
It's $499, and you know, I'm sure they could pull it off.
I think they could pull the strings if they really wanted to.
When they do that, I think it'll be a lot better. But it's not yet. The colors are one of my favorite things because they've got the all screen design. They've got colors, blue, green. They didn't do a red one, did they? They've got space gray, silver, blue, green, rose gold or pink. I don't know, but
yeah
blue and green are the new colors there though, at least. And that's nice. And it doesn't cost as much as an iPad Pro does. And you get the iPad Pro, kind of look and feel with it. So it's very nice.
You don't sound too keen. I know you've got one.
Yeah, I ended up buying one. And, this was announced in September and came out in October, I believe it was. And I think the way it shook out was that I was going to buy a new iPhone and then I got review unit. So I didn't buy one until the Max came out. And so like I had money already spent on the phone that month. And so I ended up getting an iPad just so I could have the experience for that. And I use it as an iPad, I use my Mac for work and I use the iPad to last night I watched TV on it all night, falling asleep and even woke up and watched the news on it. It's really, really good little thing. And that's in the case, in the keyboard case, Magic Keyboard. I've never used iPads that much. And so still, but the other thing is though, Jason Snell had a thing in his first review of the iPad Air that even though this gets Touch ID on the power button, which we'd love on our phones as we have to wear masks this whole year. And then for various reasons, you'd love to have just the choice of both, depending on the scenario that you're in. If I'm wearing a motorcycle helmet, I want to just use my finger. You do that. Or if I'm wearing gloves and my face is open, use Face ID. We want that on the phones. On the iPad, having used both the Face ID on the iPad and Touch ID on the iPad, the knock against Face ID on the iPad is you're often your fingers covering it and you've got to try again because you're obscuring the camera. That's not smooth. With Touch ID, I thought it'd be way better because you're never going to have that problem of move your thumb, move your finger. You just turn on the iPad and you can go. And it's fast. You can click it and just rest for a second and it unlocks. But I've been thinking about it. I use my passcode a lot on the iPad.
Oh, really?
In times where I would just reach and swipe. I tap the screen, I put in my passcode and I don't touch that button a whole lot. And that's just like the iPhone 10 and later lifestyle, where just tap and swipe is what you are used to doing. And so even though it's got Face ID or Touch ID and you get around your fingers over the button thing,
it's not the same.
My hierarchy of preferences would be Face ID or Face ID plus Touch ID, but having just Touch ID, I think is a step backwards now. And it took you know, a couple of months of usage to kind of determine that was my, you know, my preference. But yeah,
that's reasonable. I don't own one, but I can understand that for sure. Like, yeah. And it is a shame that they couldn't get it to $4.99, but they could. It still feels like, yeah. Okay, that they didn't release it at $4.99,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure now it's on sale and stuff in places. It still feels like a good product to me. Like, I don't want to diss it too much.
It's a very good product. And when a colleague of mine needed a new iPad, they were looking at the Pro, and it's like, what are you going to use it for? And it was not the bigger Pro. So if you get the bigger Pro, that's the only size you can get. You know, the only one you can get in that size. But it was after the Air was already out, and I was like, hey, look at the Air. It's actually really good. And they got the Air and saved money. You know,
like, I love promotion, but I am like the minority that would care, right? Like, I can't recommend people. If they tell me and they want an iPad, why would I suggest them to get a Pro?
It'll be clear when the new one comes out and there's a different screen technology, I think.
Yeah, when there's a yeah, exactly.
Because then even if it's just your TV, iPad, and you're using it for watching movies, then it's better for that, the contrast ratio, I think.
Yeah, and the iPad Air delivers perfectly on that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So I would have to think, you know, if you said that you think it's the biggest of the year that's not Mac related.
Well, what would you choose?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
Because my problem with the iPhone is, and that's October.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it has 5G. But, and the design's different.
I'm a sucker for a design change.
I know, like, and but I don't, I love the new designs, but the 12 design, I can't get as excited about it as I can, like,
do you have
say one? When the Apple Watch Series 4 came out, and that was yeah. Like, ooh.
Well, it was like, a whole new design. This is kind of a return to form.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, the 12 is fine and it's pretty, but it kind of just feels like a repeat of something we already had. Like, it, to me, it's a new design for the iPhone in, you know, 5 years.
Yeah.
But I look at it and I just see an iPhone 5 and I'm like, yeah, I know what this is like. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. In the short term, you know, I think of the iPhone 12 family, though, as like, that's the year that it changed, because I feel like the iPhone 10, it never felt dated to me until the iPhone 12 came out. And now it feels so old and chunky. And even if it's like so similar, everything about it just feels like I'm using an iPhone 3G in comparison to an iPhone 4. You know, it feels like that level of difference. And then, you know, I think that the mini is a standout in that the
12 mini.
Yeah. The 12 mini is a standout in that. Because it's a way different screen size in the full screen design with Face ID. So I don't use that phone, but I think that just having that out this year, that's way more memorable than like an iPhone SE was, or you know, even the non-Pro 12.
Here's the thing about the Mini, though.
Mm.
Reports indicate it's not selling very well.
Really?
It doesn't seem very popular.
You know what? You know, in the note I put design good is like that's what I remember from the iPhone 12 this year. You know,
yeah.
Because 5G we've discussed, it's, you know, it's what it is.
I'll take it or leave it.
Yeah. For the 12 Pro, I think that just say the color, you know, being having Pacific blue is a standout thing because it's the same everything else except for, you know, flat sides and everything.
Yeah.
The Mac size. I think this Mac size phone is better than the previous Mac size phones. I mean, it's even bigger. So that's nice. And the bezels seem, you know, they're thinner. But no, what it would be is this is the first year that all the iPhones got OLED.
That is true, actually. That's a good point.
Cause that's, you know, we haven't had.
Yeah, I kind of took that for granted because I've always had the OLED versions.
Yeah, but we haven't had, and I don't use a non-12 or a non-Pro, so I've always had OLED since the iPhone 10 came out. But that's something I care a lot about. It's like, you know, OLED is.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I'd rank OLED way beyond the design differences.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point actually. I've kind of forgot. When you're always buying the Pro models, you forget like the lower end stuff sometimes.
Yeah. And maybe the people who didn't buy the OLED models anyway don't care. But I don't know. There's something.
I think
cool.
OLED is different enough that people can like maybe they can't verbalize exactly what's different about it, but I think if you put like an OLED version and a non-OLED one side by side, people go, that one's like brighter, or it pops out a bit more.
There's something really cool about dark mode OLED when a lot of stuff's white and you're not scrolling. That's just really nice, you know. HDR video is also, that feels big because it's so jarring in a good way of how it's presented, where the UI tones down, like the white isn't white anymore, it's like gray because they raised the bar as to what 100% brightness is in that situation. That stands out. Although my experience with HDR viewing is on the phone itself, it looks good. So in just kind of my review back when these things came out was, we've had HDR displays on the phone for a year or two. Now we can do HDR video. We can capture it from the phone. And so that means we can actually see, there's a lot more source material. I don't have an HDR TV, but maybe make a difference if that was a thing.
Yeah, like that's kind of what we're waiting for on the HDR front is like a future MacBook Pro with a high contrast ratio display, for instance.
iMac?
An iMac update with a high contrast ratio
display. I guess the XDR is XDR? It's HDR?
Yeah, the XDR is HDR, but that's out of price range for everybody. So.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it is great that the iPhones in your pocket can capture this video, that in a couple of years we'll have more output sources to actually show it on and show it off.
Yep, but OLED on the non-Pro phones. That's it for me.
Also in October, they did the HomePod Mini.
Which if I was going to pick something, I think I might have to pick that because it's like the standout one of the year. Because the iPad Air, I fell out of love with it. I'm not infatuated with it. The HomePod Mini, I still am because it's $100. And it's good. It's not bad.
It sounds good. Like, yeah, I've heard a few people say, oh, it kind of sounds a bit rubbish or whatever.
It doesn't compare in sound to the HomePod Big, but it's a third the price and like an eighth the size or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. It sounds like I've, in the very limited exposure that we have at the moment to other people, other people I know have heard like the HomePods and the Minis, and they're always impressed by how they sound. Like, and yet the Mini doesn't have the same bass.
Yeah,
it doesn't have the same bass as the bigger one, and you can tell like you're pushing it at points. But a lot of people, they've never heard. Okay, I think a lot of people have never heard something that sounds as good as the HomePod Mini does. Like, in a portable-ish speaker. Like, obviously, if you've heard like in the cinema, it's different. But at home, a lot of people just don't have very nice speakers, and the HomePod Mini is pretty good, and it's very small. Like,
I gotta pick HomePod Mini as like my top thing for the year because of just,
it's a good choice.
If you can put one of those in like five bedrooms for $500, and everyone can, it has so many implications. So if you're deep in the Apple ecosystem, then you've got Siri all over the place. You've got whole home audio all over the place, which $100 for a HomePod Mini is cheaper than like what doing Sonos Play Ones would be, you know, throughout. Back when that was a bigger thing. You've got, you know, the intercom feature is nice. You've got what it means for HomeKit. If you get one in each room, main room, you can say turn off the lights and it just does it in that room. That's been true of all the HomePods, but for $350, $300, it wasn't very practical. Now you can't.
Yeah, you're not going to put HomePods in every room.
Yeah. Or even as a home hub. So I had a brief experience in my apartment where I had no home hub here and I had someone visiting. I was letting them stay here and they couldn't control the lights at all. I was just some plug. I don't know. But $100 for a home hub, and this thing is, it's better than, you know, the iPad. Not many iPads stay in one place. The HomePod Big's $300. The Apple TV is $150 or more. So even as a HomeKit, just in the HomeKit realm, it's a very big deal, I think.
So, yeah, like the HomePod Mini is really good. Like,
I bought one more last night and put it in the bathroom because it's $100. So like what I was doing was I had it on the wall between my bedroom and the bathroom, and the cord was long enough I could just move it back and forth. And I was doing it so often, like every time I took a shower, that I just got one in the bathroom now. That's good.
Did you see that thing with HomePod OS 14.3? It works with 18-watt chargers now.
Yeah.
And so there's ongoing investigations into which USB-C power packs can now be compatible with it. Because at launch, none of them really worked because required that exact 20-watt charger, like charging profile. Yeah. But now it seems like more of the portable chargers are actually going to work with it. So you might be able to take a HomePod Mini on the road and actually work, which would be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we've certainly got the one HomePod Mini that we bought when it came out. But I've been very impressed with it, and I'm very much open to getting more for other rooms, for sure.
Yeah. That I think if thinking about this year of like complaints on that Butterfly is gone, Butterfly keyboards are gone, and it's that you no longer get chargers in the box, because I've never had a shortage of chargers before, and I've always been very generous in just giving them to people as they need a charger. You know, here, take this one. I've got plenty. I no longer have plenty of chargers because I only have what I had before, not what I've gotten this year.
Apart from the HomePod Mini, which came with one.
Yeah, but you can't like take it and not use it with the HomePod Mini. It might as well be hardwired.
Like the big HomePod.
Yeah, it's like $20 you get that charger, or $100 you get the charger and the HomePod Mini, but you can't not use it with the HomePod Mini, you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
No, yeah, like, I think Pandora's box been opened and they're not going to go backwards, but...
No.
But
as soon as they said it was for environmental reasons, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
If it was like, just a price thing, then they'd have to mea culpa, but it's for environmental reasons. They're not going to
change that. Like, if people, even to this day, still complain about the headphone jack situation. And I think in 5 years, 10 years' time, people are still going to say, do you remember when Apple took this chart, stopped including chargers in the box? And people are going to be annoyed about it. Like,
yeah.
I think if you walk up to random strangers and just ask them, when was the last time Apple changed the port on the iPhone, right? People will say, like, last year. They still remember the switch from 30-pin to Lightning as if it was, like,
because it might have been their last iPhone, or like one of the last iPhone purchases.
Yeah, like maybe if it wasn't their last iPhone, it was the one before that one, right? So
even again, though it's 2012, like, it's 8 years ago.
Yeah, like these changes, they last for a long time and they stick in people's minds for way longer than you think they would. Like Apple has a reputation for changing the charger constantly, even though they've only done it like twice. And when they did it with the 12 they took out of the box, I had people ask me, do I need a new charger? Because it came with the USB-C to Lightning cable. They didn't realize what the USB-C plug was, and they tried putting that end in the iPhone. Like, people just don't get it. Like,
yeah, part of the pitch was that there's so many people already have chargers, but they only changed to USB-C last year, and they included it in the box 1 year, so it had to be...
Only on the Pro phones, not on the lower-end ones either.
Yeah, so it had to be a year-over-year upgrade for you to actually have that without buying it separately. So it
felt so people are now... They count finding a USB charger for the cable that came with the iPhone as Apple changing the port, which isn't even true. Yeah, but it now like it sits in that same headspace. Like
it's half of the cable. It's true. Yeah. It's true.
So yeah, that's definitely going to be remembered for a long time, but Apple's not going to go back on their word. But
yeah. November M1 release.
Easily number one thing they did. Like you can pick an individual M1 Mac if you want to, MacBook Air.
Yeah, that's not the longest.
Or you can just choose the entire group. Like,
I mean, MacBook Air is the winner, though, but you're right.
Yeah, like, you can, if you want to take them as a group, fine. If you just want to pick one, MacBook Air, fanless, as fast as the 16-inch MacBook Pro in so many tasks. Yeah, it doesn't have a fan. It runs a battery life for, like, 4 days. It's unbelievable. Like, they hyped it up in June with that, you know, remember that graph on the screen where they had, like, here's the computers, here's the current ones, here's where we're going to be with Apple Silicon. And everyone was like, yeah, we'll wait and see. But they really did, like, pull it out of the bag. Like, I thought it was going to be good, and I was impressed at how good it actually was. Like, I was expecting a new MacBook Air to maybe have, like, twice the battery life and be, like...
down from buying one, and you're not usually hyped over buying new stuff.
Yeah, like, back in June, or maybe even before the year, I was thinking, okay, what can Apple do by putting, like, an A14 chip in a MacBook. They'll probably like double the battery life, and maybe it'll be like the MacBook Air can then rival like the low end 16 inches on performance, right? But it's better than that. They like triple battery life for like actual proper usage, not just sitting there watching a video for 24 hours, like actually doing stuff on the device, you know, doing real work, getting your stuff done. And the performance rivals the high-end 16-inch configs. Not the, you know, not like the entry one, not the 13-inch, the high-end i9 16-inch laptops that currently still sell for like $4,000 and up. The $999 M1 MacBook Air can beat it soundly in so many tasks. And even if you don't look at benchmarks and don't look at like actual things, it just feels so fast because you open it, the screen's on instantly, you click on things in the dock, app launches are so quick. Like, unbelievable. Stellar.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Once these things get cellular, again, I don't even care about it. They don't have to change the design yet because the design's okay. It's good. And the Air was only in 2018, so it's very new still.
I would like them to, you know, shrink bezels down more around the corners and stuff, but the M1's too good for me to complain about that stuff at the moment. They've bought themselves another year of just keeping it rolling.
Yeah, I really want cellular though. When I have an iPad, I like cellular. I didn't do it with the Air because it's just how I plan to use it. But with the Pro iPad, I like having cellular. I would pay for cellular in a heartbeat on this MacBook Air because I use it on a hotspot all the time, like all the time. I would so do cellular, and that'd be a very good application for 5G. I'd take my 5G MacBook Air on Verizon and go use ultra wideband out of the park, and I'd be. Tweets would just come in so fast. It'd be great. And then
you don't understand how much I am waiting for them to just announce the 16-inch, new 16-inch with an M1 chip. Yeah. Buy it before they finish talking.
The top feature is battery life. The next thing is that performance is as good as it. Because you could always get good performance in an Intel chip. You just get a higher end one and spend more money.
And the fans would go ballistic. And the fans would go ballistic really fast.
Yeah, and you'd have less battery life. But now it's like you can get great battery life, great performance, no fan in the MacBook Air. And you don't even, you know, feel like you're over. Because I had the 12-inch MacBook with no fan and it got hot. This doesn't get hot. And people that have the fanned version of the MacBook Pro and the Mac Mini, they don't hear the fan hardly ever, if ever. So they nailed it. And we can't wait to see what they do next with these things. The big disappointment is that iOS apps, you know, because they allowed them to not be, you know, developers opt out. Many of the ones that I would want opted out. I still haven't done the thing where you sideload them in or, you know, use them through other methods, but, cause it's not like that easy. As easy as like going to the app.
I'm sure they're going to stop that from working as well in an update. They'll figure out a way to.
Yeah. And they had that update for make full screen better. And I heard that's still bad because full screen is like 4:3 ratio.
Yeah. It's like an iPad full screen.
Yeah. Which is no good on a 16:9 display, but you know, I think my only complaint, because like iOS apps, you didn't lose anything there. You gained many, and I even bought groceries last week on with an iOS app, you know, on my Mac, and it was great. I could go full screen and I could see. It was like having a 21.5-inch iPad. It showed that much more stuff. It was great how it worked. But the loss of multiple displays, unless you've got the mini. Is one that matters to me because I like to have multiple displays. And, yeah, I think it's pretty common, especially on a MacBook Pro. So, and you could do it on an Air before, and now you can't. So, I don't have hope that it'll be a software change or anything, you know, but
yeah, that's a hardware thing. Yeah. They don't have the PCI lanes to do it yet, but
yeah, which is so unfortunate because like it's so performant otherwise, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just like space on the chip. They just didn't do it, yeah. But that'll 100% be supported on the M1X or the M2 for the pros or whatever.
Yeah.
And in December, obviously, they had AirPods Max. I don't want to talk about these for too long because we've, you know, spoke about them on last week's episode and the episode before that.
I keep doing this demonstration when people come around. You know, they know that I've, you know, their Apple contact, basically. And I want to, you know, everyone knows what the phones were this year. I don't show them the iPad because, you know, I showed the Mini off, the HomePod Mini off. Because, like, look, it's the HomePod. It's much smaller now. You can afford it. But I love to just put my AirPods Max on people. My aunt and uncle were the people today that came by to visit from out of town. And I said, hey, put this on and then pick a song you like. And that was just with noise cancellation on. And they're like, they were yelling, these are really good. I can hear you, you know. And then I said, okay. I did the same thing that I did with my friends before. It was, you know, go to the post credit scene on For All Mankind where the rocket launches out of the water. And I said, okay, watch this. It's like surround sound. I'm like, yeah, now move your head around. Oh, it knows where my head's moving. And then I show them Transparency. I'm like, oh, I can hear you and it still sounds as good. It's like, no, one of these are $550. It's like, it's still a fun demonstration where like, I'm not wowed by it. I appreciate it and enjoy it, but it's still something. It's so good and rare, I think, that I can show people and they're like, I didn't know headphones could do that. You know?
Yeah.
Cause it's your AirPods Max. It's your AirPods Pro, but big and over your headphones. Mm-hmm. You know, they're good.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely hard to complain about the AirPods Max aside from the price point, I think.
Yeah.
I know there's been actually some developments where people have been having like condensation problems and weird stuff, but I think that's kind of like edge cases and not like a big main problem. It's just kind of like random individual reports of people getting annoyed. But
yeah, I wear mine out of the apartment. You know, if not on a run, that's strictly AirPods Pro territory for me.
They're too heavy to run with, right?
I don't think so. I think it'd be fine. I think it's just the sweat. It wouldn't be comfortable. I'm obsessed with running with nothing but the watch and the lightest headphones possible. But, I mean, I could definitely do like elliptical. I've done elliptical like Beats Studio before, and you get sweaty in that. I just don't want to get these sweaty, you know? And,
Yeah, they're too nice.
they're $550. So, but for just walking around, I don't feel bad at all. You know, I don't worry about it. They're good. They're very good. And transparency is so neat.
So in terms of like, that was mostly hardware stuff, right? In terms of software, let's just address the services situation. We talk about services all the time, but I don't want to like, I just while we're in the 2020 recap, Apple Arcade, basically unchanged this year, right? Like they added a few new games every now and again, but they didn't really add any features or anything like monumental. I think we're still kind of waiting for them to like do a new, like have a really like top flagship game. They've clearly invested a lot of money in it. Go like, here we go. This is it, right? This is what you want. It's fine. Arcade's like fun puzzle games. And, you know, if you've got a family with young kids and stuff, it's great. It's only $5. You get no ads. It's nice. But it definitely feels like they've got untapped potential there for like a big budget investment into something that's like, wow.
One more on Arcade. I wonder if there's, you know, now we all have it with, if you've got the Apple One Premiere bundle, then you just got it. And even then, I was revisiting arcade games and down this time, I was like, none of these really excite me. My kind of game, though, is like a race car game or a driving game. And even those big world games, they don't have that now down. And so the ones that are in arcade aren't for me. Even
you're not attracted by Sonic Team Racing.
No,
it's not the same as like a proper racing game.
It's not. Neither. Yeah. So there's that. They do have one good racing game though. I forget what it's called, but they've got one decent racing game. But you know, in the age of a PS5 and an Xbox, whatever that's called now, I think that my preference would be to have like the best kind of racing game I can get, and I know it's not going to be on arcade, on an Apple TV, even, you know. So,
yeah, like I think if they can get to the what I think arcade needs to get to is to like rival Switch games like Breath of the Wild.
I was going to say, I wonder if there's a long term market for what arcade can offer. I think on the phone it's pretty cool that you can get all these ad free games and they're good for the phone. But when you scale it to the Mac and the Apple TV, then I wonder if there's that appetite for that. Or if when you're at that level, you expect more than what you're going to get right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they should try at least. At the moment, they haven't even tried. Okay. News Plus, audio stories, pretty cool feature, pretty cool addition. Kind of gone under the radar, but we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I think trust me, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
you can't listen to it.
Trust you is good, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'd love to listen to some audio stories, Apple. Please release it in more countries.
Yeah.
I think
in that regard too, with News Plus Audio, I think next year maybe is when we start seeing maybe the podcast original stuff, because we haven't.
Oh,
that
yet. That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
And that'll certainly be international, I hope. You know?
Yeah, come on, podcasts. They got to do that worldwide, right?
Yeah. So that'll fill your crave for that.
Yeah, original podcasts are coming. And they'll be part of an Apple One bundle, I'm sure. They just haven't arrived yet. TV Plus wise, I think the main thing is they just got the app distributed onto many more platforms this year. They expanded to loads more smart TVs.
Games consoles,
yeah. And even on like, they announced it's coming to Chromecast early in 2021.
Uh-huh. Which is interesting, yeah.
Yep. And even like AirPlay, you can get AirPlay directly on Roku. So even if you don't have the TV app, you just have a device and you have an updated Roku, you can just
One of the last things missing is like, is it on there? I don't know, but they've got it on. They have it on the Fire Stick. That's Amazon, right?
Yep.
Do they have it on the show?
They don't have it on the show. They have it on the Fire Cube and the Fire Stick.
Yeah. So those Echo shows that, you know, smart speakers with screens, that's pretty low on the list of priorities too. But if they get there, it feels like it's almost complete.
Yeah. So like, it took them a while, but now they've got pretty solid distribution. So heading into, you know, 2021, when they do have big flashy shows, you can't have the excuse of, oh, I don't know how to watch it, or I can't access it, right?
Like, yeah, it would need to be like an Xfinity smart streaming box channel, like all those obscure places that, you know, it's in all the major places right now, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, good job on that regard. And they added the TV tab, the TV Plus tab recently, so that was great.
They could do that, yeah.
But, again, we're just waiting for more content there. On that one, like, unlike Arcade, I feel like their ambitions are on track. So, like, on Arcade, what they've released, I feel like they're kind of...
Well, and there was the report and a change of strategy for Arcade to have... Mm-hmm. What's the idea there, that you want to have one game last a long time, like be easily replayable?
Replayability, versus- so that you have like a puzzle game can have 1,000 levels, so you can spend a really long time on it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're doing like this cool adventure story game, it might only give you like 10 hours.
Sayonara Hearts, you can finish pretty soon.
Yeah, you finish it in 3 hours and then you never want to play it again, right? And it was a great game for those 3 hours, but if you want a subscription service replayability, like, but, you know, we still have to see whether that actually plays out or whatnot. Yeah. Like, we just don't know.
We're
but
still in
so
Arcade
far,
Phase 1.
So far, we're in Arcade Phase 1.
We would
1.
Be in Apple TV Phase 2 if not for pandemic, but we do have a good roadmap of what's ahead.
Yeah, like, if you think they spent money on their shows they've done so far, you should wait to see what they got coming. Like, I promise you, at least their ambitions for, like, quality and production value have not wavered at all on TV Plus's front. Fitness Plus came out.
It did. It was
pretty
announced and came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was
pretty good.
It was, I think we had like a semi story on it, you know, based on all our like March rumors, one that we didn't even have enough to run on. And, you know, it was mostly like Apple should just do this based on what Peloton's doing with their subscription stuff and other competitors. And then they not only did that, they announced and released it, and it's good. Yeah.
And
has so many places where it can mature and be better in the future. But for what's 1.0, it's very good. And so hopefully in, you know, a year from now, we're talking about all the new stuff like audio guided runs and workouts. And
Agree.
Yeah.
And I don't want to forget Apple Music. I think they've done a good job, with Apple Music over the last couple
of years.
Yeah, they
fixed the icon this year.
Yeah, they fixed the icon and they've added like, you know, endless playback, and they've gotten, you know, more streamlined like Listen Now tab. Like, I think that since Oliver Schuster took over that division, they've done a much better job of like keeping in step with like the Spotify thing. Like, for a while, it kind of felt like Apple Music was like coasting, but
the only thing that they didn't improve on was the year in review.
Yeah, exactly. The end of the year stuff still needs updates, but just in terms of like overall app usability, they upgraded the iPad experience. It's good.
And okay, my frustration with music in 2020 is that they didn't do transitions like they have on the Mac.
Crossfade.
They have on Android now.
Android, I know.
But not the iPhone or the iPad. So that's got to be a next year thing.
Yep.
Because it's on
the
Android.
Most recent Android release. You can do crossfade between songs.
Yeah. Always
that'll come
Mac,
to iOS.
Now on Android. No.
Maybe in iOS 14.4 beta 2.
Maybe they'll buy a new company and that'll be what enables it.
See, that was kind of like services. Yeah. Shebang.
Software
in terms
releases.
Of general operating system updates, obviously we had 14, macOS Big Sur, WatchOS 7, tvOS 14.
What's the big thing in 14 for you that you recall?
I guess widgets.
Yeah, widgets, definitely. Yeah, widgets. Yeah. Widgets and getting rid of home screens, which is, I guess, in the app library category, but just not having to have every app on a home screen, because I've got one home screen and an app library. That's so good. I've very much changed all my motion, you know, muscle memory to how it is now. I like it very much.
Yeah, and I'm not widget crazy. I have one widget, which is my weather widget. That's on a home screen, right? That's on the first home screen, the 2x2 grid. Mm. It tells me the current weather, and it tells you later in the evening, it tells you what the weather conditions are going to be tomorrow. Absolutely love it. It makes me so happy. I don't want anything else. I just get the nice live weather. I got rid of the weather app icon, so I can just have the widget. Love it. Fantastic.
I have Fantastical, which shows me a month calendar view and the list of events. So it's like 2-in-1. Love that. I have Pocket Rocket, which shows me the next upcoming SpaceX rocket launch. And what I like about that is just like personalizing your wallpaper. I feel like if you look at this home screen, you know it's me, not just by app choice, but by widget choice. Mm-hmm. And it feels like, oh, that's Saxophone. And then for the Apple News section, it's just space subjects. So it's news, but it's not the political stuff, because you can pick the topic that your widget shows. And so I actually learned things from that. And it feels very personalized, where it's my schedule, you know, my interest in rockets, and then my interest in space news, and then the apps I actually use. And I've got a full screen here with only 12 app icons, you know, plus the widgets. And
I
like it. And then like page zero is battery, maps, which I ended up, you know, I like that, but not for the home screen.
Yep.
I don't like stacking widgets, because I want it to be a little bit less crazy than that. I think that's too much. Too crazy. Even if you turn off the smart mode where it changes on for you, I think at that point when you're swiping widgets, just go to another page. And that's what my page is for. I've got a reminders widget, but it's just my shopping list. It's not all reminders or just reminders. It's just shopping, which is cool. Weather, activity, and then music and podcasts. So
yeah, they did a really good job with widgets for this year.
They did. Except on the iPad, but you know,
fair, yeah, that's again the iPad's neglected.
That's a theme that we'll never get rid of.
macOS Big Sur, I've acclimatized the design. I still
redesign.
Think that
yeah, that's the big thing. Redesign.
Yeah, I still think the notification stuff needs changing, and hopefully they'll fix that. But in general, I'm happy with the design. It's fine. Yeah.
Control Center is good. Redesign is either like it or you don't, but I like it, so it's good.
WatchOS 7, I could struggle to think of anything in particular. Like, I don't use the sleep tracking to any reasonable degree.
Sleep tracking was kind of disappointing in terms of the scope. Hand washing,
I tried it for a bit, but it came too annoying, so I turned it off.
It met the moment. I turned it on again recently, and I noticed that you get the feedback. It'll ask for feedback, were you actually hand washing, or if you end too soon, it'll ask you, you know, did you actually fit? You know, it asks you questions now. They're trying to improve it. I turned it off though because it's good for habits. You know, the alerts where if you go to a frequent location and change locations, it'll remind you to wash your hands. Good. That's good for all the time. Even, you know, post pandemic, we can cut down on flu and colds in that regard. The timer is very good because 20 seconds feels a lot longer when you're brushing your teeth and washing your hands, you know, and maybe that's the next thing we need is like a toothbrush. You could easily do that with a watch.
Yeah, there are loads of apps on the App Store, by the way, that just do toothbrush timing. So they could do a watch version of that. It'd be pretty. I'd actually probably use that.
But my experience with the hand washing has been that I'm way more aware of the 20 seconds now. But it's hard to convince the watch that I've been washing my hands for 20 seconds when I have been, and I'm not going to fiddle with that. Like that's too annoying to worry about, you know. So it's really good and bad.
And then TVOS 14, it was fine. I do like they've added like the better HomeKit integration, so you can see your cameras. And if you get like the doorbell ringing, if you do happen to have a HomeKit doorbell, it like comes up on a little like picture-in-picture window in the corner. Like it's good integration. TVOS 14 is plodding along. What we really need in that department is a new Apple TV. Like,
yeah.
If I'm looking ahead to next year, what do I want specifically? I want the M1 16-inch MacBook Pro. And I want an Apple TV that's modern and not as expensive.
Yeah. What was new in WatchOS besides hand washing? I can't get off of it.
Sleep tracking was
pretty... Well, yeah. Was audiobooks new this year or was that before last year?
No, I didn't think audiobooks. Okay. Audiobooks been around a while.
Apps got better?
A little bit.
What got better about apps? You can do...
They took away Force Touch.
Take away Force Touch? I went for my first run like this week in a long, long time, probably since WatchOS 7 was out. And I'm still finding things that are nicer about no Force Touch, just that they could have always done. And then there's obviously things where you just have to forget that you ever could do it because it's a little bit slower now in some ways. And, you know, things
you just have to forget that the headphones and the charger were never included in the box.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's fine. You have to forget that you didn't have to go to the settings before to change the calendar view. Now, you know, you can do it right in the
app. That is annoying.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah. But when I went for the run, though, I looked at the music app and I don't even know if this is Force Touch related, but to go from... Maybe it's just all in one, but the way that they had this before, I think it was just two different screens where you've got your buttons on iPhone now playing library, listen now, search, and then there's the album art that you know, flows over that. I think it was two screens before, now it's one, and it's really nice.
I think that's been like for a couple of years, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I just hadn't gone for
it. It is really nice, though. I'll give you that.
Yeah, I just hadn't gone for a run in a long time.
But yeah, looking ahead to 2021, my things I'm most anticipating... Apple TV update. I don't mind the remote, but if they want to change the remote up a bit, sure. But make it cheaper and give it like an M1 processor so you could like run games really well, for instance, for like the arcade synergy. How about you? Anything you're like begging for?
I'm stuck on WatchOS 7. I'm trying to think of what's I'm looking at the page. Family setup's a good one. So you
family
can,
setup, sure.
You can... It's just that I didn't go back to Series 3, which can run WatchOS 7 but not do family setup. And it requires Sailor, which we understand, but it's a bummer. But that's a big one. The kids mode's cool. Man, I don't care about Memoji.
I think you struggling to find stuff kind of summarizes it as sleep mode and hand washing.
Yeah. I don't feel fulfilled right now, though. I don't want to give it its justice. Here's the thing. Customizing your activity rings. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. That is good, actually.
Yeah. That's a very good one. Yeah. Way to go, watch OS 7. We learned about that release day, basically.
Yeah. Because I've turned my stand. I never reached my stand goal thing before, so I've turned it down to something that's more achievable. Because what's the point in having goals that you never meet, right?
Yeah. And sleep, the bedtime mode, you know, where you can schedule things, I think that's more of an impact than sleep tracking itself.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, you know, here's data over time, but here's, you know, here's a mode that you can automate. So that's what it's got to be. Sound alerts. I get those and I'm like, yeah, listen to my headphones loud. What can I do about it? You know, and now I'm at the bottom of the page. So ability to adjust your goals is good.
I'm glad you searched for that, because that is definitely something I've forgotten about. But yeah, that was nice.
Even like even the ability to show your watch face, like, that's cool and all, but
no one does that. Come on.
But we want custom watch faces.
Yes.
And then that feature will be very useful.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got the infrastructure there and I deliver the rest. Looking forward, man, I'm very happy with the iPhone right now. There aren't rumors of a cellular Mac, but just that's something I'd want to have as a cellular Mac. Practical though, like what's bound to happen in 2021 is whatever happens with the iMac.
Mm-hmm. You know,
if it's the same tire design, then, you know, the notebook's got a pass. They get a pass, and the Mac Mini, you know, it didn't get more miniature, but whatever. But the iMac gets no pass because the iMac didn't get a pass. You know,
iMac is so dated. Like, the laptops are a little bit dated, but they're good enough. The iMac is just so, so, so outdated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that, and all signs point to a good update coming soon. So we just have to wait out for that.
Yeah. And I am excited for what happens next with the iPad Pro. I'm curious if we see just a 12.9 inch update or if the 11 inch sticks around, because the Air right now is so close. Although hopefully this new one pushes further. But we'll see about that. But it's got to be iMac for me, because as like what will affect, you know, how I work and everything.
That's a good answer. Yeah.
Yep. And isn't there a quote report about a redesigned Apple Watch next year? That's a thing.
Yes, there was a quote report saying there's a new form factor Apple Watch in development.
As long as they don't just like box, you know, square off the sides, and there's something, you know, that advances the design.
I'm kind of due to change my watch because I'm still on Series 4 actually. So. Mm-hmm. Next year, I'd be down for a redesign.
Yep. So 2021, the year of the redesign, iMac and Apple Watch.
And an Apple TV.
I've done too many posts on iMac that are saying, like, they're like, here's me reporting this information, you know, rumors, not report, but rumors of an Apple TV, and then get burned. So I can't talk about Apple TV.
You want one though, right?
Yeah. I need to upgrade my TV because I had OLED. I don't have OLED right now, and I like OLED a lot. So.
Yeah, our living room TV is due to get the 4K treatment. Yeah. So when the next Apple TV comes out, I'll do both at once. So looking forward to that.
Cool, cool. And then before we go, just in general, how was your year 2020? Because I know for us, we work remotely. We've always worked remotely. We were a little bit conditioned for this year, but, you know, because of that, it has been a bummer that we don't get to, you know, go out and do things in life, though. You know, and obviously, as people that you know are affected by the pandemic, for myself, I'll answer, you know, I moved this year. My space hobby became much more my day job. Way less than if I'm Mac now. Chance Miller's the lead editor now, not me. And I just get to write when I want to write, which is really nice. I'm focused on the space side. And this podcast is my most 9-to-5 Mac involvement every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had a good year, you know, aside from the pandemic.
Yeah. I was all right. I didn't get as much like development work this year as normal.
Because it's affected by business. Yeah.
But I got a pretty good project that I've been working on since about September time. So
that's
kind of made up for it and stuff. And I don't know if people have noticed, but I haven't been posting on iTunes Mac as much recently because of that. But
okay, sure.
I will, I'll be back at it, I'm sure. I don't know, like, it's hard to say you've like not been affected by it because, you know, there are other people in my family who, you know, close to losing their job for real, and they've
right, yeah.
It's been.
I mean, your dad was stuck on a ship.
My dad was stuck on a ship. Yeah, that was pretty scary actually in March.
Yeah.
But
like
I can't complain. None of my family have been like seriously injured, or we've somehow managed to avoid actually getting it right so far. So it's been pretty good on that basis. Like, hopefully we can ride it through. And it's quite nice that we've been able to end the year with like vaccines actually happening for some people. Like,
yeah.
I know my nan is actually getting vaccinated tomorrow. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to stand here and like, you know, be all like chivalrous about it and just say, oh, it doesn't matter, and shrug it off. But
yeah, we're very fortunate in that regard.
We are fortunate that, number one, our primary jobs we can do from the comfort of our home already. We had no adjustment in that places. I've never had been at risk of like anything. Like, so I have to be very grateful. A lot of that's to do with this podcast and everyone that listens to this. Like, it's nice to have
There was a slowdown at first, like in March, looking at the listeners, you know, the levels, there was a slowdown in listening. And for me, I felt like, you know, A, there's not as much travel, and podcast listening is a good way to kill, you know, travel time. But then also, your priorities, and whenever it's so uncertain, we were all learning about what are the boundaries of this thing. And, you know, what we were all in learning mode. The week in Apple news didn't really matter that much.
Yeah.
And I think it's the fact that we've been able to keep doing this and get a lot of listener feedback that, like, you know, helps motivate me at least, to where, you know, it feels like doing this podcast is more of a service than ever. Because it does provide kind of a constant to the before times. And
plain and simple, I love doing this podcast with you, and it's great that we can also get paid for it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Support our sponsors. I agree with that. This year, I learned to ride motorcycles too. I've always wanted one since I was 16. I turned 30 this year, big year. And right before I turned, about 6 months before I turned 30, I got a motorcycle. And today I got my license after 6 months.
So, look, it could have been a lot worse. Let me put it that way. 2020, yeah. 2020, it hasn't been everyone's favorite year by a long shot. But I'm grateful for what we have. You know,
how many years have we podcasted together?
Almost six.
Okay. And we still haven't met. And then we thought about it this year. Because you're in the UK.
Yeah, it probably would have happened this year, actually.
Exactly. But. Exactly. There was a point in this year where I was planning out a live WWDC event for the podcast.
I forgot that was even the cards, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Whether it was with you or by myself and like you on a computer or whatever, but like it was being planned. And now that's so long ago, you know?
It will happen. It will happen.
Yeah. Let's say 2022.
It's probably going to be 2022 at this rate, because like vaccines are starting to happen and stuff, but you don't have to be a genius to realize that we aren't going to be done with this by the middle of next year. Like,
my expectation is late spring for my age, and you know,
yeah, like my nan's going to start getting vaccinated tomorrow, but in Britain, it's going to be until like at least like June before the mass population has been able to get vaccinated and stuff. And in terms of like Apple event stuff, if there's a March event, that's 100% going to be virtual. If there's a WWC, 100% going to be virtual as well. Like, currently, I'm thinking maybe the September event will be able to be quote back to normal if they want to. But even that feels a bit touch and go.
Yeah. And I do have friends who work in the hospital environment. And I know in recent months, it's been much harder than even in the beginning. The beginning was scary because it was brand new and uncertain. But the workload has gotten much harder. And so, you know, if you know people in that environment, keep in touch, talk to your friends. And, because it's been so fun. Like in the beginning, I was like, what can I do to help all of you? Let me buy you dinner just to give you like one moment of relief. And now it's like the problems are much harder. And we're definitely not out of this period yet. So,
obviously, best wishes to everybody in that kind of situation. Cause I know people personally, but also there's plenty of people out in the world that we never meet, but they do so much for us indirectly.
That's right. Yep. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this year. We will be back next week. If you have any feedback on the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ApolloZac. That's APOLLOZAC. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And we'll see everyone next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.